God built us like Legos, where it's like we do better when we're connected to one another. Yeah, we have our individual part to play, but the beauty is displayed in the togetherness. So I think that's where, for us, our faith has been the key component of how we've been able to go through forgiveness and healing and reconciliation.
On In Good Faith, we believe that all faith traditions have something to teach us about how God is working in the world and in our lives. So join us as we listen and learn. Today on In Good Faith, we're talking about Legos. Sort of, figuratively, it's a metaphor for connection, and really connection within families. It could also be in a church community as well, and how to not lay shame on each other. With me is senior producer for In Good Faith, Heather Bigley.
Hello.
Also, Aaliyah Ebert.
Hey, everyone.
So we're talking today with Chris and Julie Bennett. Chris Bennett is the pastor of Vintage Church in Malibu, California, and Julie is a writer and speaker and two-time cancer survivor, and together they run a production company called Welcome Home Entertainment. We're talking to them because they recently published a book called Fighting for Family.
And as Chris will point out, typically you might think it would be fighting with family sometimes. I love that Julie came up with three rules she's going to share with us for how she wants to conduct herself in her relationships. And I thought those were pretty insightful.
So we'll talk to them first about why they decided to write this book.
We all have a story. We all have a story that's being written, and all of us have chapters of our story that we never thought would be in there. And, you know, I think we've found that, you know, in an Instagram curated filtered world, we love to post our ultimate highlights, and those aren't as relatable as the fails and the messes of life. And so we really wrote this book to just share our story, which is filled with a lot of pain, a lot of disappointment, a lot of bumps and bruises along the way. But, you know, we found that as connected as this generation is through social media and technology and beautiful things like this, that we can be on the other side of the country and have these conversations, it's being called the loneliest generation. And right as even we were writing this book, the U.S. Surgeon General put out this 85-page document, and the title was Our Epidemic of Loneliness and Isolation. And so there's this false sense of connection when what people really need is to find a place where they can belong. And even though that word gets thrown around a lot, the essence of belonging is, where can I bring my whole self and not be judged because of it? Where can I be loved? Where can I be accepted and feel like I've got a place of belonging? And so that's really why we wrote this book, is although we have our own family and four kids, that's not everybody's story. And for many people, their family is their found family or their chosen family. But because of pain and wounding around something that was meant to be family, people tend to isolate. The tagline is the relentless pursuit of building belonging. And so we help people kind of identify and overcome the barriers that keep them from experiencing family.
And you make this really clear in the book that whether we present something we create or whether we actually share authentically from ourselves is a difference in being able to actually feel that we belong or not.
We wrote it in chapter 4. It was called Excuse the Mess. And that is one of the barriers which lends itself to isolation, is it's like, I'm going to show up, but I'm going to leave my arm and leg behind because I don't know if anybody was going to want to see that, you know? And bringing our whole self sounds like a really great thing. It's so difficult to do in the world we live in, especially because we're so connected and everything is seen and it's curated. And the one thing we all can relate to is that we've all been a mess, felt like a mess. We know people that are a mess. And there's something that when we can bring our whole selves, it's like human plus human equals human problems. That's real, because perfection doesn't exist. But how do we create spaces for people to do that?
And because you've shared so vulnerably in the book, I'm curious, a lot of people have the experience of they get brave enough to share, and then they're waiting for the repercussions or the blowback. Mm-hmm. And yet, so often, it's not there. Yeah. People appreciate it. Is that your experience, or have you had some of both?
I personally have had some of both. They say vulnerability breeds vulnerability, and we need that in the world. But sometimes I'm needing something so badly internally that I am vulnerable because I'm insecure. I'm vulnerable because I need a friend, versus vulnerability to bring who I really am. And there's a difference. Vulnerability is risky. We walk away going, oh gosh, I'm sure they're judging me. I probably am definitely not going to fit in now, going, if my vulnerability is coming out of a place of, I'm wanting to realize that other people have mess too. I'm coming to bring just who God has created me to be in this setting. That's different than I need something from you. And again, that comes from doing the work of knowing our true identity.
And I've seen so many people that they're living from their wounding and they're just attracting wounded people to lick their wounds with them. And so I think we're going for, there's no perfection, but let's go for health and let's work through the stuff that we need to work through so that we can present the parts of us that are, yeah, not clean, not perfect, but that's where people can actually get helped.
And I think there's something really useful that you've put God in the mix here.
Yeah.
I mean, that just seems like a basic ingredient of what you're talking about. And from the outset, you were looking to speak from a faith perspective. I feel that in the book.
I would say that what we know is humanity, whether you are a person of faith or not, we were designed, we believe, by a creator for belonging. You know, we were actually created for one another. I mean, the first thing God said in creation that wasn't good was man to be alone. You know, God built us like Legos, where it's like we do better when we're connected to one another. Yeah, we have our individual part to play, but the beauty is displayed in the togetherness. So I think that's where, for us, our faith has been the key component of how we've been able to go through forgiveness and healing and reconciliation. So we speak from that vantage point, but also recognizing that whether you're a person of faith or not, we're all kind of looking for the same thing, which is, can I be loved? Can I be accepted? Can I find a sense of family?
Yeah, because perfection is not the secret sauce to building family. You know, it's our humanity, it's vulnerability, it's rallying around those things that we can all relate to.
Your chapter on humility, if I can quote the two of you to yourselves, what Chris and I have learned, especially since we married so young, is that you go through a lot more change when you stick around in relationships. So we should expect it, not as a byproduct of relationships, but as one of the reasons to stay in them. We need other people to help us grow, and no one grows faster than a person willing to listen. And that's sticking around for each other, even when it's like, oh boy, well, I mean, I've been married going on 36 years. We have four kids, two of them married, third grandchild on the way. And there are those moments where you look at each other and you take a deep breath like, oh, we just turned a corner and I now see some rapids ahead. And you're going to have to live through this. So here you call it fighting for family. What is the fighting part? What is it that you actively have to do to create that belonging with the other and learn from each other?
I know not everyone is married that's listening to this, but when we made a covenant, you know, we said our I do's. It's easy to say in a beautiful wedding ceremony, but every one of those things gets tested by life. And I think for us, watching how we live in a culture that knows how to fight with their family. We live in a cancel culture where people so quickly are willing to walk away and lose their family over their preferences. And that, I mean, we saw it with politics. We saw it during COVID. I mean, I have friends who literally lost relationship with their parents over vaccine positions, you know, and you're going, wow, the margin for error seems so small now in relationships. And obviously, there's unhealthy, toxic relationships. We're not advocating to stay in abusive, toxic relationships, but we are saying it is inevitable that the closer you get with somebody, the more likely there is to be pain and wounding. And there's nothing that will refine you more or reveal your brokenness more than a person up close and personal. So I think that's where we just said, you know what, the gateway to any relationship is the continual willingness to forgive and not keep a record of wrongs. That's the only way we have the marriage we have today. And we still hurt each other and we still disappoint each other, but we've chosen to walk in radical forgiveness.
A couple things that just are really simple that we try to live by as a family, especially in those moments where everything is clashing like giant cymbals. And maybe it's not a literal, like I'm leaving the family. It's like, I'm walking out. I can't have this conversation. You know, whatever it is, they're very simple. But when they bring us back to humility, you know, they bring us back to a place of like, you know, how can we regroup? There's some things where we say, I'm gonna allow myself to be a mess. I'm gonna let other people be complicated. And as we do that, we realize, man, we can come together. When Jesus was around the table and what he created was such a sense of belonging, it's how he went about it.
You're listening to In Good Faith. I'm Stephen Capp Perry, back with you in just a moment.
Hi, this is Stephen Cap Perry, and I'd love to recommend one of our BYU Radio family of podcasts for you. It's called The Appleseed. It's filled with stories for you and your family. Every episode features really excellent, nationally known storytellers sharing all kinds of folk tales, fairy tales, personal and family stories. It's great to put on and listen to for road trips or bedtime for kids or anytime you want something to get the whole family not only listening, but then those stories generate conversations. And it's so easy to say, hey, do you have a story about this? Or, oh, that reminds me of when grandma said, or whatever it might be. Check out the Appleseed podcast. You'll have fun and you might learn some new stories from your own family members.
We're back with In Good Faith, and I'm speaking with Julie and Chris Bennett about their book, Fighting for Family. Would you comment on, and you hinted at one of them here, what you call the three commitments?
Yes. The first one is, I can't control everything. I will allow myself to be messy around others, and I will let others be complicated. And the first one's so important because I'll speak more for myself, but I've really learned that perfection and control don't create belonging and relationship and family like I think it does. That comes from my traumatic experiences, my pain. You know, I grew up in an amazing Christian home, but I also had sexual abuse in my background. We had betrayal in our marriage. And you look at these major traumatic moments in life. And so when I'm going into family that God has completely restored, when God restores something, He makes it better than it was before. And although we know that's not everyone's story where they're at right now, there's something that when we come to the mess, like, okay, I can't control everything. What I have learned, even though I have pain that I am working to continually be whole and healed in, that's a form of self-protection. And so when I just remind myself, control does not bring about what I'm really longing for. And then, okay, I can come to the table with somebody literally or figuratively and go, okay, they may have some pains too. So it just does something about how we see each other. Because most of the times when I'm judging somebody else, it's just because I'm judging myself. And so when I can learn to love those really messy parts of me, that I'm able to look at people in the context of my immediate family, as a mom, as a friend, and go, man, I wonder, maybe they're judging something in themselves right now. Why, how can I take a step back and let that person be complicated, which may allow a conversation we need to have that brings unity and friendship.
Now, and understanding that lots of people do not have the traditional family that's been proclaimed as the traditional family since at least the 50s.
Right.
And in my own denomination, they recently said the majority of the adults, over 50%, single. And so suddenly it's like, this is not the group we're trying to include around the fringes.
Yeah.
This is now at least 50%, maybe the majority. So fighting for family, fighting for belonging in a situation like that. What do you advise or what have you thought about or experienced with people you work with?
Yeah,
I think we've tried to be really aware, even, you know, pastoring a church. And, you know, sometimes we can speak a language that we think relates to everybody and realize, oh, there's a lot of people that doesn't relate to. And just sometimes it's just acknowledging who's in the room or who's around us, that our story isn't everybody's story, but we're all looking for the same thing. And one of our friends said something. She said, you know, belonging is not just something that you find. It's something that you bring. And we were like, hang on, can you rewind and say it again? Mm-hmm. And she just made the point that, you know, sometimes we love to be invited in. That's the best when we get invited in. But what happens when you don't? But you start with this place of identity of, okay, I believe I have worth and I have value, that I belong. But if I don't believe I belong, guess what? Everywhere I go, I'm going to be waiting to be rejected and left out. We had a lady in our church that, you know, we talk big about family and our church feels very welcoming and all the things. We had a lady in her 40s that was single that set up a coffee meeting with me. And she said, hey, I've been coming here for a while. And so several weeks in a row, she goes, I would just stand in the middle of the room and see if anybody would talk to me. And I watched everybody talking and no one said a word to me. And she goes, so I wanted to get angry and I wanted to leave. But I went and I prayed and I said, God, what should I do? He said, I want you to go back and I want you to find every person that's standing by themselves. And I want you to invite them in. I want you to create belonging for them. And so I just thought that was a really key practical thing that we can do. And that takes risk, because anytime we step out, we're risking, hey, this might not work out, or I could get rejected, or this thing could fail miserably. But we just believe family is always worth the risk.
Yeah. beautiful to keep in mind.
Well, yeah, there was this whole study done from BYU, and the essence was being around people doesn't equal belonging. Yeah. You can be surrounded by people and be lonely on the inside. And I did a funeral 2 weeks ago from a guy in our church, married, had a son, 3 grandkids. This man served on our setup team every week. I love this man deeply. He battled with depression. I was checking on him, how he's doing. And he was like, you know, I've been really low. And he said, I just don't want to be a burden. And I remember grabbing his shoulders, leaning in. I said, listen, you are not a burden. And he took his life a week and a half later. And on the outside, hang on, you have family, you have community, all these things. But sometimes that barrier is believing we are a burden. And if I actually bring my whole self, I'm not going to be loved. And it's such a lie, you know, and we've got to help create spaces for people that they cannot feel so alone or that they have to have it all together.
Yeah. You talk also, and here's a quote, if you feel like God is nudging you to do something, say yes, before you know. And I'm tying that in with a question I have here about how did your faith in God influence your being okay with taking risks?
Julie is by personality more of a risk taker than me. So I think sometimes we think risk means I need to go skydiving or something. To me, us risk is...
I do love to skydive.
I think I heard somebody say this years ago, faith is spelled R-I-S-K. And I think sometimes risk is just taking that one little step of faith towards something that you feel like God may be leading you to do. We tell people all the time, you know, we moved to LA without a home, without a job, without income, moved 20 times while she's battling cancer, all these crazy parts of our story. And, you know, we had people saying, well, I need to do something crazy. We're like, no. Yeah. It's not a comparison.
That's right.
Like risk for you is going to look different than risk for us. I found that God will give us just enough to say yes. And then we almost have to wait for the next part and then the next part. And then we look back months, years later, we go, oh, wow, we've come so much further than we realized.
I mean, if we wait for every duck to be in a row, we learned really early in marriage, and we will never move and step forward and be like, well, it can't be God because everything is not perfect. And God's like, have I said go? Have I said yes? And of course, that's the framework that we're operating in. And so when we went from pastoring a church in Oklahoma for a decade, leaving everything, which is a really long story why we came to LA, but with so many confirmations from God, and then everything falls apart. I mean, our home that was sold didn't sell, and we found ourselves with 8 suitcases, 4 children in LA, staying with the family for 2 weeks, and now we don't have the money from the sale of our house. People that thought we were crazy really thought we were crazy. Even our like faith friends, if you will. And it's like, guys, come back. And then I find out a few weeks later, I have stage 3 breast cancer and need to start chemo immediately. And the movers were literally trying to steal our stuff. And it was almost became comical. And so you would think we have missed it. We missed God, however you want to say it. But we knew we had a choice to make. It was very clear for us as a family that we were supposed to go, even though we didn't have all the other answers. And we just had a moment where we had to go, okay, God is either who he says he is or he's not. I didn't find out I had cancer in Oklahoma. I found out here. We would have never have come. And it has been a journey of a lifetime over these last 6 years. And I mean, never thought we'd write a book about a lot of these things, but we found ourselves in our yes going, okay, to Chris's point that he just said, we're going to trust that God has shown us his faithfulness over and over and over again. In Joshua 4, it talks about these memorial stones that they had laid out, these 12 memorial stones. It's kind of like, why are we doing this? It's because as soon as things get hard, which life is absolutely hard and unpredictable, we're going to have to remember who God was for us. Okay, that's right. Oh, he came through. Okay, oh no, what about now? Now you have cancer. Now this happens. But this is who God was. And our promise is not that tomorrow is going to be easy. His promise in the Bible, he says, I will never leave you or forsake you. So we held on to that. He's called us here. We do not know how this cancer journey is going to end. We don't know what it's going to look like to get a home. We just said, he said, go. And so it was something that just marked us forever. So there's all these little choices that we make that we don't know how it's going to turn out. But he said he's going to be with me when it's real hard.
When we're changing, when we're being vulnerable, there is the risk we take that there will be. Well, I wonder if we've talked about the word shame and how we can avoid that, imposing that on other people or taking it on ourselves, because it seems like that's not a useful thing in our journey.
Yeah, I remember with one of our kids when he was probably 8 or 9, I got a call from a parent saying, hey, this is what your son did. It was just something that was not appropriate, that he knew better. And I remember my immediate reaction as a pastor, I was like, this looks, because it's all about me, right? I immediately go into my own, oh, shoot, like this doesn't look good on me as a parent. Yeah. And I'm on my way to pick up my son at school. And I'm literally about to walk up. And look, I'm not like a yeller and I'm not going to like humiliate him. But what I wanted to say was, how could, you know, just like, and right before I get there to pick him up, I in my spirit feel God saying, he already feels so filled with shame. If you put shame on him, you're going to lose his heart. And it just kind of stopped me in my track. And so I walk in, you know, pick him up. I'm holding hands and we're walking out. I said, hey, buddy, I got a phone call from so-and-so. And as soon as I said that, he started just shaking and crying. And he knew exactly what it was. And what he didn't need from me in that moment is say, how dare you? How we say things like this. Look, we are putting shame on you. And any place of shame is a place of bondage. And that is personally or in any place of relationship. And so what I did with my son is I just sat down and I said, hey, buddy, look at me. I love you. I know who you are. I know that's not who you are. And you could just see kind of the shaking go to this like, oh. And I just know that became this kind of MO for us of going, okay, we've got to make sure in whether it's our kid or in our marriage, you know, we're not taking shots at each other. You know, most of us are already dealing with our own shame of the regret of what I wish I could have done different or why did I do this? We don't need to put shame on people. Most people have plenty of shame on them already. So I think we're actually called to take shame off us. I think it's what God does for us is he takes the shame and guilt off us.
You know, we've actually been talking about that in this current season of our family. We have a true identity that God has given us. We have false identities. Those false identities are formed from our fears. They're formed from the people around us. They're formed from maybe your own parents. So there's times I've seen my kid walk in a false identity, not who they're called to be, because maybe I've put something on them unintentionally, someplace I'm working on. And we've been asking this question, like, what is the, you know, the main negative emotion that we deal with on a regular basis? Now, majority of the time, people are going to say fear. For me, it's shame. Shame is the immediate negative emotion. And I referenced a couple of things that I'd been through in my life and in our marriage. That tends to be the thing I want to go back to is like, oh, wait a second. It's like a check engine light for me. And I've realized and there's the like, I am statements. I am unworthy. I am this. And we're saying I am whatever it is, constantly, even subconsciously, it's kind of going in our thoughts. You know, we're even taking it a step further in our walk with God, where we know that the Bible says as followers of Jesus that we're children of God, but he's also given us a name, Psalm 139, before we were ever formed in our mother's womb. Even then, God said, this is what I've written about you. This is who you are. So we're always trying to go, okay, in these cycles of what we believe about ourselves, what has God said about us? Recognizing that those shame statements, those shame moments are check engine lights where we want to open up the hood.
I'm really intrigued by what you said about we say those things to ourselves almost like we've been trained to be our own person to hold us down or hold us back from God.
Very much. Yeah. Which is why the beauty of who we're made to be is formed in community. Speaking of isolation and building, fighting for family and belonging, it's like that's not something we're just all just hanging out in our room every day trying to figure out. Like, that's a starting place. Like, get with God or get quiet, whatever your routine is. Absolutely. We tell our churches a lot, like, we have to help one another as we become who we are. We allow ourselves to be messy. We're giving space for vulnerability. And when we practice it, it's a practice. We didn't write this book because we're family experts. We are guides and we're learning, right? And through our stories we share, we have learned these strategies by failing. We're taking the risk. We're learning to be a mess, but then we're doing it in humility. My favorite part of the definition of humility is seeing yourself rightly. How do I do that? I do it in the context of family.
You've shared a lot here today, very generously, which I really appreciate. Can you put your finger on a reason why you believe?
We have undeniable proof of God in our life because so many times we were at an impossible situation. And I remember years ago hearing somebody say, you know, everybody wants to see a miracle, but nobody wants to be in a position to need one. And every time we've stepped out, that's where we've seen God step in, miracle after miracle after miracle. And It's hard to explain God's presence, but his presence feels like peace and it feels like love. And in our most chaotic times, there was a strange peace and a strange joy that we knew where the source was.
I would just say the greatest part of our journey, as we have discipled people, as we walked with our own children, as we've walked in community, is that God can handle the hardest places of our lives. So in our truth, even if it feels ugly and messy, God's always responding with grace and mercy. To thank you so much. Thank you for telling me the truth about how you really feel about me. Now I'm going to bring my truth to you. And that's how we transform. That's how we repent. We get to walk in repentance, which is him changing the way we think, and then we transform. And that is the heart of fighting for family, is that family is not something to frantically grab a hold on. It's a million choices over and over again that allow us in community to transform. And it just shows us the heart of God more than ever.
That was Julie and Chris Bennett. They shared a crazy story from their personal lives about moving across the country and just making a lot of decisions that a lot of the friends were concerned about, all because they felt it was where God was leading them. And I love that they put their trust in God and it paid off. And they said that God is either who he says he is or he's not. And they decided to put that to the test.
And Chris talked about how narrow or how thin the margin of error is sometimes in relationships today. That if we disagree just a little bit, it's like, oh, you're out of my life. That's worse if you're in a family and even living in the same space. Just that messiness includes we will feel differently about important things. We will step on each other's toes, but that there is something that comes of sticking with each other through that messiness. That's the forgiveness. That's the grace. That's the learning. And that we're not supposed to stay the same. Families and close friendships, all of those close relationships, they often are our opportunities, not always pleasant, to step on a few emotional Legos, if I can tie it all together.
And I love this idea about looking around and seeing where the need is. They give us that example of the woman who feels lonely and goes to God about that and is told, nope, that's your job to actually help other people feel less lonely. And just recognizing that God can speak to us and help us heal our wounds by helping other people, I think is an important lesson.
We're grateful to Pastor Chris Bennett and Julie Bennett for speaking with us today. Our episode was produced by Josh Orton. Our production team also includes Heather Bigley, Aaliyah Ebert, Leah King, Katarina Martinich, and James Sturdivant. Our post-production sound designers are Lauren Sandberg and Brandon Lewis. In Good Faith is committed to the idea that we all benefit from hearing people of widely varying backgrounds share their personal experience with faith and belief. In fact, we think people with such experience deserve some of our best listening. Is interfaith understanding important to you? Would you like to be an interfaith amigo? Be sure and leave a comment or review on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts, and help us spread the word. Find us on social media, too. Twitter is In Good Faith Pod, Instagram and Facebook, In Good Faith Podcast, and videos on YouTube at youtube.com/in-good-faith. In Good Faith is a production of BYU Radio. I'm Stephen Cap Perry. I hope you join me again soon, right here in Good Faith.